I want to begin today with migration, and I'm going to get all of your reaction to the incident at a proposed refugee site in Clonmel in County Tipperary. People have been hearing in the news that Gardaí are investigating after security workers were assaulted and a number of vehicles were damaged by fire at a site earmarked for modular homes for 82 Ukrainian refugees. It happened on Thursday night. Minister Oisin Smith, the details on this: we know security personnel contracted to work at the site were assaulted by a number of individuals and it resulted in the hospitalisation of one of those workers. What was your reaction to that?
I think it's horrific for the worker themselves and for their family that they could be out doing a day's work and to be assaulted in that way in your workplace simply because, you know, because somebody feels that they've got a different political opinion from somebody else and they turn on somebody who's not even relevant. I think it is absolutely shocking and intolerable. And, you know, there is a right to protest and there's a right to have different opinions and there's a right to have a debate. But there's no right to attack people that you disagree with or to intimidate other people who are loosely related. And that kind of thing cannot be normalised. It's a criminal offence. It's a criminal event. I expect the Gardaí will be investigating it and I'm looking forward to seeing people being arrested and charged.
Do you think at all that people who are prepared to carry out this kind of activity are being emboldened at all by the change in tone of the debate in the country and, I suppose, the response of cutting benefits, for example, to Ukrainian refugees, that there's a signal going out that somehow refugees or those applying for international protection or asylum are less welcome now?
I think they're being emboldened by social media, by the fact that you can put something up on social media and it takes some time for it to come down. You can attempt to celebrate your crime online, that you can get plaudits and likes and so on, and that it takes too much time for that material to be removed. So I think what would have been in the past a shameful and unacceptable thing is becoming more normal, not just in Ireland, but across Europe. You know, this attack on not just on government people, but on opposition and independents and anybody related to the democratic process, you know, it can't continue. It has to stop.
All right, Ivana Bacic.
Well, just as Oisin has said, I was horrified to hear of this attack on a security worker, and it's awful to hear that this person has been hospitalised. And, you know, I think all of us would want to send thoughts and sympathies to the worker, to their family, and indeed to all of those who are on the front line, who are putting themselves at risk in some way. But I think the real issue here is that it is only a small minority and that this is a crime and this needs to be prosecuted. It's not reflective, in fact, of the enormous welcome that communities across the country have shown to those who've come here seeking refuge over recent years. You know, and across the country, we're seeing really positive examples of integration, of initiatives that welcome people here. The small minority who are intent on inflicting violence, who are intent on creating and sowing hatred, you know, they have to be pursued with great rigour through all means, through law enforcement, also through social media regulation. That's essential. But it is also important that government takes a hold and deals with the accommodation crisis, because that is creating its own security risks. In my own constituency in Dublin Bay South, we're seeing people still sleeping in tents along the canal and they are at risk. And indeed this week, Colm, I've heard from the great local residents and volunteers who are providing support to the people in tents. I've heard from them about attacks on the mostly men who are in tents, on those who've come here to seek refuge and who are at risk. And I've heard of attacks on volunteers providing aid to them. So this is really serious. A small number of people intent on sowing hatred should not be permitted to continue with impunity, but certainly to see people housed in tents and not offered any alternative secure accommodation by the state. That is a failure of government policy. And I've said this week, I'm concerned that tents and I suppose, you know, permitting tents to take the place of a proper accommodation policy, this amounts to a sort of Rwanda policy. Is it there to deter people from coming here? Okay, that's a really serious question. Nothing could justify any of the horrible attacks we've seen.
We're going to get to the broader question of accommodation shortly. But Sean Canny, I just want to get your reaction to that incident in Clonmel, that attack in Clonmel on Thursday night.
Well, first of all, my thoughts are with the injured person and with his family. I think it's horrific that something like this can happen. I do have faith in the Gardaí in their investigation and that this matter will be investigated properly and that we will see people brought to justice. is not to be tolerated in any aspect or for any reason that we would have violence as a way of convincing people to do something different. And I think it's important that we realise that we had enough of violence in this country and we've got rid of the violence as best we could. And to be using violence for political expedience is actually something that we should never tolerate. And regardless of the issue, there are ways of actually explaining your view on something, lobbying for it, protesting about it, but actually to harm another person is actually going way beyond what democracy affords and should afford in any country.
All right. Well, the issue of people seeking international protection, of migration and how the system in the country works has been, I suppose, to the fore of the political debate in recent months. I want to have a look at another aspect of that system now, and that's the system of processing the applications of hundreds of international protection seekers who arrive here every week. 459 asylum seekers arrived here last week, according to the latest report from the Department of Integration. The Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, and every government official you'll hear from on this and have been saying in recent weeks, they're emphasising two things. There has been a decrease in the number of migrants arriving from so-called safe countries, and that the speed with which asylum claims are now processed and dealt with has increased significantly, so that those who are not entitled to protection are quickly identified and asked to leave voluntarily, or they become subject to a deportation order. And we know, however, that deportations are rare, and here to tell us more about this is Cathal Malone. He's an immigration lawyer working in this area. Good afternoon to you, Cathal.
Good afternoon, Colin.
Thanks for joining us. There are deportations and there are deportation orders. And the latest figures we have for the year to date are that 444 deportation orders were issued, but 35 people were actually deported. Can you explain to us first how a person is served with a deportation order?
Sure. So if somebody fails an asylum claim or if they're unlawfully in the country, they are issued what's called a notification of intention to deport. And this gives them an option. They can leave voluntarily at that point. And if they choose not to take that option, they have 15 working days in which to make representations to the Minister for Justice, in which they explain why perhaps they should be allowed to stay in the country. If those representations are successful, then they are given permission to stay in Ireland. If they are not, then they're issued a deportation order. That order requires them to leave the state by a certain date. If they don't do so, they are committing a criminal offence. They're subject to arrest without warrant by a member of an Garda Síochána, and they are then subject to reporting requirements, very like bail. So they'll wind up signing on in a Garda station maybe every week, every 2 weeks, for a period of time while their deportation is being arranged.
All right. Can you tell us, when you say leave voluntarily, does that mean they just make their own way out of the state, or is there help afforded to them to leave the state if they need it?
So there is a UN agency called the IOM, the International Organization for Migration. They will help organise plane tickets if someone can't afford them. And in terms of leaving the state, in terms of how that is recorded, you'll generally be asked to report to the immigration officers in the airport to record the fact you're leaving. Now, this doesn't always happen. And obviously, if somebody just books a ticket themselves and leaves, that's something that's not recorded, because, as your listeners will be aware, we don't have a system in Ireland as you would have in many mainland European countries, where we check passports leaving as well as entering. In Ireland, we only check the passports coming in, not going out. And so in those circumstances, it isn't possible to collect statistics as to who leaves on their own bat, so to speak, or who is deported or maybe undergoes a supervised departure.
All right. You mentioned it's a bit like bail. You show up and you sign on. Mm. Are you given a particular date and told definitively that that's the day you'll be leaving the country?
No. So what happens is you're given a day to sign on, and in almost no cases would the first date be the day that you're deported. So maybe you'll be told every second Wednesday in your local Garda station, and maybe you'll sign on 5 or 10 or 15 times, but one day you will you're walking to sign on, maybe you're going shopping afterwards, maybe you're going home to make a cup of tea, but actually that day the door will close behind you, and on that particular day, which you will not be advised of, that will be the day that you'll be taken to the airport and deported. So you're not given advance warning.
All right. You say you might go shopping or you might go home, but if you're not entitled to work and you're not entitled to claim social welfare, What are you living on when you're on a deportation order?
I think the reality is that people are working without permission. And I think that that is, I mean, everybody has to eat. People need bread. So I think the reality of it is that the authorities are well aware that if you have somebody waiting for 6 months to be deported, if they can't lawfully work and they of course can't claim social welfare, then they'd be working cash in hand in what you might call the grey economy.
Right. So just to be clear, I heard a political representative in the recent past talking about illegal immigrants claiming benefits. That's not possible under the system, is it?
Oh, of course not, because the fact of the matter is that in order to claim social welfare, you have to satisfy various tests. And one of those tests is being lawfully resident in the state. So it's completely impossible for somebody to legitimately claim state benefits if they're unlawfully here.
Right. And if somebody doesn't show up for one of these signing on appointments, what's the consequences then?
If they're detected by a member of an Garda Síochána, they can be arrested without warrant and they can be held in prison for up to 8 weeks to arrange their deportation. But the fact of the matter is that in terms of showing up to sign on, I mean, we don't have a policy in Ireland that, we're stopped on the street and asked for our papers. There is a power conferred upon an Garda Síochána to ask non-nationals to produce identity documents. But, of course, how do you know whether somebody is, in fact, somebody who is a non-national?
Right. So just to be clear, Irish people don't have to carry an identification. They don't have to produce a form of identification.
On mainland Europe, there is an ID card system in every country in Europe, but Ireland and the United Kingdom do not do this. So people will be aware that we have a passport, maybe a driving license, maybe a public services card, which is not required for all purposes. So because we don't have a national ID card system, we don't have a situation where people are stopped on the street routinely and asked to show ID.
Right. So to be blunt about it, a stop and search issue or somebody's papers being demanded would involve an element possibly of racial profiling unless everyone on the street was to be stopped.
Absolutely. And it does happen in that one place where this power is used very frequently is on the bus and train service between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. And, I mean, I've seen it myself and I've heard many reports of this, that when a bus is stopped, they don't ask the fella who's from Cork or Limerick, and it looks like he's from Cork or Limerick, to produce papers. But if you happen to look Chinese or if you happen to look from an African country, you will be asked. And if you don't have papers with you, you will be taken off the bus or train to the Garda station. And it may be that you were in fact born in Ireland to parents from China or parents from the Congo, etc. But you'll be taken off and you will be asked to explain your presence. And of course, if they can establish that you are actually Irish, then there's no difficulty. But of course, there has to be an element of racial profiling in that.
Right. And if you don't have your driver's license or passport, you might be detained a while then. Okay.
Absolutely.
Can I ask you then, is there an appeals process? So once you get a deportation order, can you appeal that? Because we hear about delays in the system. What's the appeal once you get a deportation order?
There's no appeal. If there's been a fundamental legal error in how the order was issued, you can go to court, the High Court, and seek to have it quashed on that basis. But that's on very narrow grounds. That would be, for example, I said earlier that they have to give you a notification of intention to deport and give you 15 working days to respond. So as an example, if they didn't in fact send you the notification, you didn't get the 15 working days, that would be a reason to have it quashed. But essentially, no, there is no appeal.
All right. And are there some deportation orders that just never get actioned?
Yes. The major reason for that is that we saw this recently where Rishi Sunak said he wouldn't take people back into Northern Ireland. If a country, for example, at the moment, Cameroon is not cooperating and take people back, Nigeria is being difficult as well. When I started doing my job, China was in a similar position. If a country won't agree to take somebody back, then I mean, what are we planning on doing? Are we going to fly an Air Corps plane over Cameroon, give someone a parachute and say, there you go? Because if they won't let you return somebody to the country, it's their airspace, they're a sovereign nation. And certain countries simply do not want more people being returned there. Maybe they're in an economic crisis, they have an unemployment problem, and they just don't want people being sent back.
All right. And do deportations actually happen in your experience? And if so, how often?
In any given year, about 1,000 deportation orders are made. And in any given year, about 100 deportations are affected by force. So it's about 10%. However, as I said earlier, I mean, you're given an opportunity to leave voluntarily. We don't have exit controls, so it's impossible to say what number of people leave under their own steam, so to speak.
Okay, Cathal Malone, immigration lawyer. Thanks for that. Good to get the insight of somebody who works at the coalface in this. So still here in studio are Oisin Smith of the Green Party and Minister at the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform, Ivana Bacik, Labour Party leader, and in our Galway studio, Sean Canny, Independent TD for Galway East. Oisin Smith, does the state have any estimate, even an estimate, a ballpark figure of how many people in the country have been issued with deportation orders who just haven't left?
Yeah, I don't have that. And the as you heard from the from your interviewer, we don't keep track of who has left the country. So there when you come into Ireland, there is immigration control. There's a passport check. There's no passport check when you leave the country. So, and of course, we have an open border with Northern Ireland as well. But we don't know how many people have left the country, and we don't know effectively. We
should
can't
that
tell
be tracked?
Somebody has left.
Should
well,
that
I mean,
be
I
tracked,
look at the US, and after 9/11, they brought in changes whereby they check your passport leaving. And up to that point, of course, Irish illegals were coming home for weddings and everything else and losing their passport and so on. And there really wasn't effective control over who entered and who left. And there wasn't a clear inventory of who was in the country. So I imagine at this stage, with the increased coordination across the EU and trying to work out a system with the UK over shared information about refugees, I think that everybody is looking at how to have better information about who is in the country and who isn't.
Okay. I suppose the mantra that we've been hearing over the last while from almost across the political spectrum is a system that's firm, a system that's fair, and a system that's efficient. So
and fast.
If people
justice delayed is justice denied and so on. So we need fast processing. The processing times have gone down, but we can do better. And part of coordinating with other European countries is to get a faster process. Faster process means you've got fewer people to accommodate during that time as well, but it's also fairer to people and particularly to those who genuinely deserve to get their decision. So having a faster system is important, but it has to be fair as well.
But if you have a system where in 2019, the year before COVID that's relevant, there were 2,009 deportation orders issued and a total of 249 people were deported. That's about 12%. By 2023, there were 957 deportation orders issued and 76 people were deported. So numerically and percentage-wise, that's 7%, the number of people being deported had dropped overall. And it's a fraction of the deportation issues that are ordered. What explains that?
Well, you only, as you heard in your interview, you only need to deport somebody if they refuse to leave, if they don't comply. So, you could have if the situation is that more people are overstaying, then you're going to have more deportation. Well, if more people are compliant, then you don't need to force a deportation.
Okay, but there are 12,000 live deportation orders at the moment. That's the figure as of last year. And the number of deportations being enforced has fallen. So is that a sign that there are people overstaying who have been issued with deportation?
It may
orders.
Be a sign that people are more compliant and have left. You know that, and we know, for example.
But as you say, as you acknowledge, you don't know that.
We don't know. We don't know for sure. But for example, in the case of Ukrainians, we know we've had 103,000 people arrive, 103,000 Ukrainians, and that there are 83,000 in the country at the moment. So we know that 20,000 have left. So it is normal for people.
But they benefit, I suppose, they benefit from a process where there is no decision being made on whether they have the right to leave or the right to remain or not.
They have much better conditions, and yet 20,000 of them have still left.
Okay, but with respect, mentioning Ukrainians in this regard is a slight red herring. This is about international protection. When people fail in that system, they're issued with a deportation order. Now, if there are 12,000 live deportation orders, what does that say about the state's ability to execute those orders?
They may have left. And so, and if when you receive a deportation order, you're in a difficult situation because that is the end of your right to state accommodation. You're not receiving free food anymore. You're not receiving your money every week. And you certainly can't work. So you're in a very difficult situation. As you said, the only thing you could do would be to participate in the black market. Where are you going to get accommodation? So for a lot of people, they'd find that they might be in a better situation.
Okay. Well, I'll come back to this. Sean Canny, what's your position on this?
I would say when you look at the figures, there's a lot of people who we don't know whether they've left the country or not. So we have a black hole in terms of information. And I think this is one of the biggest problems we have with immigration, is that we don't know, and I would say we, nobody knows where a lot of people have gone. As you said, there's 12,000 people up to last year who had deportation orders. Have they all left the country? We don't know. So I think we need to have better controls. We have the technologies to report on this and to gather the information. I think what's happening is that we have been sleepwalking our way into something that has now become a crisis. And that's just the deportation part of it. I think it's important, you know, when you have voluntary deportation, we don't know whether people left the country. I think that in itself is a statement of a lack of understanding of what deportation process is all about. We should bring it to the finalise it by knowing that people have left the country, rather than just leaving it in the ether and we don't know whether people have left or not. I think that's a worrying factor. And I think it's also something that we can correct with the help of other countries, but we need to have the resources there to make sure that passports are checked leaving the country as well. And so be it. It will be discommoding for some people, but I think it's important that we set the scene, that we are now recording what's actually happening in our country.
All right, Ivana Bacik, what's Labour's policy on this in terms of having 12,000 live deportation orders, and but without any knowledge as to how many of those people are in the state? What would you do?
Well, for the Labour Party, we've always stood for a fair and efficient immigration policy, and I absolutely agree with others who say we need to see speedier processing with fairness, of course. It's of concern that there are, I think, 21,000 persons currently awaiting a first instance decision in the international protection system, albeit I acknowledge delays have things have improved somewhat. I used to meet people in direct provision a number of years ago who'd been waiting years for a decision, and that's not appropriate, it's not humane, it's not fair, and nor is it efficient. I do accept, and I think Cathal Malone put it very clearly, that of those deportation orders that are live, we don't know how many people have voluntarily left. There is an issue about information, and that is a concern. But, you know, we've seen information sharing in a helpful way, for example, with Operation Sonnet last October, where we saw the Garda National Immigration Bureau and the Northern Ireland Immigration Authorities cooperating on information sharing to return people to Holyhead who'd entered illegally. So there are ways around this. I think what we've seen, however, is a very unhelpful intervention from government in the shape of Minister McEntee's assertion that 80% of people claiming international protection had come through Northern Ireland without, it appeared, any real data to back that up. That's unhelpful. What would have been helpful would have been an intervention some months ago, which I had called on the Taoiseach to carry out, to engage diplomatically with the British government on the impact of the British government's dreadful Rwanda policy, which we, myself here and indeed Claire Hannah in London, had in Westminster, the British Labour MP, we had pointed out to the Taoiseach that the effect of the Rwanda bill in Britain was going to diminish the equivalence of rights protections north and south. And Claire Hannah, in fact, I should say it was Stella Creasy, the British Labour MP, who was raising it, and in Westminster. But indeed, the difficulty for us was we could see that this was going to undermine the Good Friday Agreement.
But on the issue,
and that's what the Belfast High Court ruled
on the issue of live deportation orders in the state, do you favour, you know, more flights removing people, or what would be your approach to putting them into effect?
In the first instance, I think we need to see a review. I think government should be carrying out a review of those orders to see what the status is. And the guards do this quite routinely for example, you have live arrest warrants. When I used to work in criminal defence, you know, we'd be very conscious there were often live arrest warrants out for people, and this would be, and district judges would constantly be frustrated because they couldn't be sure whether a guard had acted on that or not. In the same way, I think we need to see a review of those deportation orders so that we can try and ascertain how many people have voluntarily left. And clearly in every state it's better for people to leave voluntarily. It's more efficient, it's a fairer way of doing it. And many people served with such an order.
In the absence of the information as to whether people have left, it requires in-state enforcement if you're not going to be able to catch up with people at the borders, Oisin Smith. So Cathal Malone was saying there that it's highly likely that people whose deportations are delayed and delayed and delayed again and as you mentioned yourself, their material circumstances are difficult while they're under such an order, it's highly likely they're working in the black economy. So isn't there a benefit into boosting the state's inspection regime to see how many people are potentially being exploited or working in the black economy to try and get to at least some information as to how many people are still in the state and also clearing up poor and illegal work practices?
Well, as Cathal said, we don't have a national ID scheme and we don't have a system whereby you can be stopped in the street and asked to show your papers. So
that's why I'm saying, is it not better to go into the workplace and be able to find whether or not everybody in the workplace is compliant so the element of racial profiling is diminished?
So in other words, work permit compliance, increase in work permit compliance is what you're suggesting? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly. I'll take that on board and bring it back to the relevant minister. But certainly, I think it's very difficult for somebody to remain in the state and work and in a normal, in a regular workplace. I don't think you're going to find somebody in an office or working in a warehouse who doesn't have the right papers. It's a crime for the employer, and I think it's much more likely you're going to find somebody in a much more casual and a regular job.
Okay,
Callum, may I say this also? I do think it's important that the government would show leadership by creating more legal pathways for people to come here to bring their skills and expertise and to work here legally. And, you know, we're constantly being told the reason why government can't build more houses is because of lack of construction workers. So we should be offering people legal pathways to come
here and actually
to
that's
a far greater degree.
And that is because
of the positive benefits of
migration. It's a misconception that the immigrants in Ireland are mostly asylum seekers. The vast majority of people who are working in Ireland and the vast majority of immigrants who come in have come in through the correct channels. They've got all the right papers. They've got the right to work here. They've been issued with work permits. And I don't want a situation where people see anyone who looks different on the street and think, well, you must be an asylum seeker. It's just not true.
And government need to show leadership. Our hospitals are being staffed by those who've come here. Our construction sites all across the country.
We have other issues to get to. We want to have a look at the local elections after this.
Saturday with Conamo Mungon on RTE Radio 1.